Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Our parenting expert, clinical child psychologist, Dr. David Coleman, is here now. You're very welcome, David, and it's lovely to have you here in the studio.
Bit of variety.
Yes, it's great to see you in person again. Now, you can send your questions in for David to todaycb@rte.ie or text 51551. Now, we have lots of listener questions, David, for you, but I have to ask you about this because it's an issue in our house and I know in everyone's house at the moment. Parents are getting in touch with us all the time wondering how they speak to their children about what's happening in Ukraine. And it's really difficult because you can't sugarcoat it, really. And for the ones who have sense, they know what's happening. You can't hide it from them. So how do you make it palatable for them and dealable with?
I suppose it's one of those situations where, you know, we don't have any kind of control over what's happening. It's all happening in this big kind of geopolitical kind of scene away from us. And for, depending on the ages of children, what children often need to know is, well, what can we control? Because that's what's going to reduce their anxiety. So I think the first thing for almost any child who's probably, you know, kind of 5, 6 up in school, they probably have an awareness of it. So you want to find out, well, what do they actually know? Because again, there could be all sorts of stories traveling around playgrounds now and in schoolyards, and not all of it will be accurate. And of course, some of that might be raising their anxiety. So the first stage is just talk with them in a kind of an exploratory way to just get a sense of, like, what do they know? That gives you an idea of what you then might need to explain more of or to be able to reassure them about, as much as you can reassure them. And then it's about, I guess, with older kids and teenagers, certainly really talking to them and just trying to get a sense from them about, like, where in terms of their feeling, what impact does it have? So are they highly anxious? And if they are, then again, maybe bring them back to, well, look, here's what we can control. This is the bit that, you know, we have a say in. You know, it's possible, like we were only just talking about the idea of, you know, that if there are Ukrainian refugees coming, like, could our house, could we actually, you know, put up another family? Like, you know, it's like, how would that actually practically work? But, you know, my youngest is 17. And so it's real, you know, we have space in a way that we didn't have space. And so those
are
the kinds of...
Is that helpful, though, to talk about ways in your family that we could help? So whether that's a donation or talking to Katrina there, who's looking for tents and food and power banks.
Yeah.
You know, if you say to your children, let's all come together and see how we can help people in Ukraine. Does that provide a mechanism to talk about it?
For sure. And it's much more positive, and it gives them a sense of that there's hope, because I think that's the big thing sometimes as well. If there's no hope, you know, and again, because, you know, those who are old enough who will have a sense of, you know, why isn't the West doing more? Like, why are we not stopping? This man seems to be a bully, because essentially that's the way, if you were to look at it in from a child's perspective, that's what Vladimir Putin is doing. He's just bullying the rest of the world, going, I'm just going to do it. What are you going to do about it? And of course, nobody wants to do anything about it, because the potential exponential growth in terms of the war becoming something horrendous and huge is too great. And so it's really dangerous to, you know, to aggravate things. But even having that conversation might help, you know, your older children or your teenagers realize that, okay, there are good reasons why things have to be the way they have to be. Mm. Even though, as you say, it's just not palatable, because who wants to stand by and watch people being killed? But I think the difficulty is, like, I mean, you know, in most situations, we stood by and watched people being killed, you know, in Syria and so on. But it hasn't touched, I think, our lives in the way that this does, because of the proximity. I think, you know, Ukraine is so close, you know, it's very much linked to Europe. And if you know, something, this is something that could happen to us in a way that other wars or other situations haven't. And so it's easier to kind of keep those a little bit at bay. I think that's why this is perhaps more meaningful for so many families now, because it just feels like, oh gosh, you know, this is actually
happening. It's on our doorstep.
It's on our doorstep, and we're feeling it already. Like, I had to fill my car with diesel today, and it's like, holy God.
Yeah.
You know, and last week, you know, I paid whatever it was, you know, 10, 15 cents less per litre. And that's directly associated.
And we're going to feel that in food prices and other things as well as time moves on. Will we get to some of our questions now that have come in?
Other queries, yeah.
So I want to start with this one. This is a child who has a ritual. Dear David, my son is 5 and a half. In the last 6 months, he has begun a ritual whereby he touches the ground with both hands, touches his shoes, and then proceeds to put both hands in his mouth. After washing his hands, he then does it again almost automatically. He also has accidents after school, possibly even 3 times in an evening, and he wears nighttime pants, so I assume like a nappy pants.
Yeah.
I'm looking at making an appointment for a play therapist, but would appreciate any help. Would that be a good first step? Do you think a play therapist is needed there?
So, yes, I mean, I think any kind of therapist will help him because it sounds like there's something going on. So I'd be interested to know with the wetting, whether that's a new thing or whether actually he's always had, you know, an element of daytime wetting. So it's rare for a five-year-old to be daytime wetting. And typically, if a child starts to wet themselves or wet the bed and it was a child who was previously well-trained and wasn't, then that suggests that there's something emotional perhaps going on. The fact that this is...
I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So there's what's primary and secondary enuresis and encopresis. And so primary means that a child has never really properly been trained. It's like almost like, without wanting to be too, it's like a really bad habit that has continued and just needs probably a bit of intervention. But if it's secondary, it's usually that something has happened that has disturbed something for that child, that this is almost like a response to that. Now, you know, the only big thing that's likely to have happened, well, again, with the little bit of information that we have, if he's 5 and a half and he's probably just started school in the last six months, so that'll be September. And so it's quite likely that if that is the coincidence in terms of the timing, that there's something about school, not necessarily that there's anything particularly bad, but just how he's responding or reacting or coping with school might be a bit of a difficulty. And so that's, again, something that mum or dad might want to just explore for themselves, talk to the teacher, just establish maybe is there something going on, you know, that they're not aware of in school. And also, obviously, you know, I mean, 5 and a half year olds are able to chat for themselves, not always necessarily in the most useful way possible for us, but they might also be able to explore that a little bit there. And then for sure, if you get a play therapist or, you know, that mum might want to talk to a psychologist herself. Again, it's often because here I am, you know, hypothesizing about different things that might be there. And sometimes talking and getting a different perspective from someone like me can actually really help without necessarily her son needing to see anybody. So that might be another route to try and explore it.
It is interesting that in the last 6 months, the ritual has begun.
Yeah.
And if that coincides with the start of school,
it
then
would
maybe
suggest something about
something.
Anxiety. I mean, that would be my first guess again there. You know, rituals, any obsessive compulsive type rituals tend to be anxiety based. So I wonder, is he worried about school? Is he worried about something that's happening in school or something that he's not able for in school? And then, you know, that allied to, again, wetting is typically associated with anxiety.
So a bit of exploration needed on that one. This one, my son has had many visits to a child psychologist for a very specific phobia. He's 16. He's no better. When I inquired with the psychologist as regards his progress, his reply was vague. The psychologist said they wouldn't breach my son's confidence and that it would take more time. I'm paying €100 weekly and I feel very out of control. Do you have any advice? Now, I know that you're not going to want to second guess what the psychologist is doing here, but would you think at this stage that it's time for a second opinion?
Not necessarily second opinion. I think it's definitely time to go back to the psychologist, though. I suppose, I mean, I work with children and teenagers, predominantly teenagers now. And so I'm always conscious they're not paying for their sessions. It's a parent who's paying for the session. So the parent is involved in the intervention, whether, you know, a psychologist might like it or not. So it's not that that psychologist is just treating the son. He's treating essentially the whole family. And I guess, you know, I would suggest that, you know, it probably isn't that psychologist. It's just good practice to keep parents informed. Like I would typically do, you know, every 3 sessions or so, some kind of feedback to parents just to say, look, we're on track, we're not on track. This is what's working, this is what isn't
working. So you
don't
agree with this, that the psychologist here said, oh, we won't breach your son's confidence?
No, I absolutely agree that it's important not to breach confidentiality. But there's a lot of what's probably happening that's not necessarily confidential that you know, the psychologist and the son could have a discussion about to say, look, your mum is obviously concerned that you don't seem to be making progress. You know, we need to give her a bit of feedback. Here's the kind of feedback I think would be useful for her. You know, is there anything that I might say to her in this situation that you would definitely not like me to say? Because it's possible that alongside the intervention, say, for example, it's a social anxiety. And they said it's a specific phobia, but, you know, and that was to do with something like bullying, you know. And if the bullying was significant, then the parents should have been told about it anyway. But if it was kind of mild and it was about, you know, the son, maybe the son doesn't want their parents to know about that yet. And that's okay, as long as it's actually been dealt with. So I think really it just sounds like it's about, you know, that mum and that psychologist communicating a bit more about what's going on. I think it's fair if you're paying for a service, which the mum is, that you have some...
You should know what's happening to a certain extent.
You should know that it's useful or not useful.
Yeah.
And so you need some information to help you make that decision as to whether it's still useful. If you like, I mean, if I was paying €100, I'm I would have no issue. Nor do I have an issue with parents coming to me going, you know, can I have an update? And I'd say, absolutely, I can have an update. You know, I'll be seeing your son and whatever, we'll discuss. And yes, absolutely. immediately we'll see you for 10 minutes at the end of the session.
That's good fog clearing advice now. You know, just have the chat. But sometimes you just need someone to say that to you.
It does sound though that mum has been a bit fobbed off by the psychologist who's kind of said, look, you know, no, this is protected space. I get that too. It's really important for teenagers to have their space. And if they come to see a psychologist, it's really useful that they have this other person who's there. But I think, you know, anybody who's working with children and teenagers needs to realise that parents need to be actively involved in the, you know, not so much necessarily with the content of what's going on, but at least with the process of it, that it's functional, that it's useful, it's having an effect. And for the mum, she's not seeing the effect yet. Mm-hmm. And so I could see why she's thinking, well, you know, here I am, €800 in and,
not seeing what's happening. Yeah. We have a dad of a teenage girl here. My daughter is 16. She started well in secondary school, but her interest has declined over time. She's not interested in school at all, completely disengaged. She's only interested in makeup, TikTok, nails, eyelashes, and does minimal schoolwork. She has a part-time job. We hope this would make her realise what low-paid work would be like if she didn't work at school, but this seems to have backfired because she's happy doing this repetitive, low-paid, part-time job. And he just wants to know, what do we do from here? We're afraid that she's going to limit her future opportunities. Now, it's not unusual to have a 16-year-old who's interested in all of those things that we listed out, the nails and the eyelashes and the TikTok and so on. But if that means that schoolwork is being completely neglected, you can understand why the dad is worried.
Absolutely. And again, you know, it comes back to what are our expectations and what are our children's expectations. And so I think, you know, by the sounds of it, you know, the mum and dad in this situation probably have, you know, quite a strong emphasis on education. They believe in the value of education and they're right to believe in the value of education. It makes a big difference for those opportunities that children might create for themselves. But I think there comes a point at which you really have to be sitting down in a very practical way now with a 16-year-old who doesn't legally need to be in school. They're not obliged to be in school anymore. And so...
Don't tell her that.
Well, exactly. But I think from the mum and dad's perspective, you know, like maybe it's about sitting down with her and going, look, you know, this is what we're worried about. I think it's, you know, when we list down the behaviours that we observe that are problematic, it's way easier than saying you're a lazy layabout, feckless, you're going nowhere in life and we're not paying for it, you know, which is possibly where they're at in terms of frustration levels with this 16-year-old. So I think it's definitely for them about sitting down and saying, look, here's what we're worried about. Here's what we think you might be missing out on. You're 16. It's very hard perhaps to see 5-10 years down the line. I mean, I end up having these kinds of conversations with clients all the time. You know, they're exactly that age, 16, and they're saying, you know, oh, you know, they're wrecking me head about school. And I'm like, okay. And so, you know, where do you see yourself? Like 23, like what are you going to be doing? And they're like, I don't know, I'll be working. And I'm like, okay, how are you going to get that job? What kind of a job do you think you'd like? What will get you there? What and how are you going to do that independently? So if your mum and dad said that you're out in the street now, how would you actually earn money? How would you survive? You know, somebody's telling me, oh, well, you know, I'd rent somewhere. And they were like, you know, like, how much is rent? And they were like, I don't know, 50 quid a month. And I'm like, yeah, you're a bit off the mark there. It's an awful lot more. So here's, you know, how are you going to earn €600 a month? Yeah.
So it's a reasonable, level-headed conversation without all of that frustration there. David, I have to leave it there, unfortunately, but I'm going to ask people to send in their questions to todaycb@rte.ie. We always get so many in for you and we'll see you back here very soon. That's David Coleman. Take a break.
Today with Claiborne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.